All right. Welcome everybody back to another episode of Hardcast. I am Bradley Stone.
I'm Billy Mills Curran.
And today we are just straight shooting the shit.
Big ol' shoot the shit.
I will say, I think that, can we say now that we are a bi-weekly pre-modern podcast?
There's a policy to it.
Yes, but at the very minimum, we are bi-weekly.
Yes.
And I feel like this episode proves it because we didn't have anything to talk about, but we felt the need to sit down and record and get something out there.
We're a bit exhausted from the last one. Maybe that was a lot of work.
Yeah, last one was a lot of work. We went to Rochester. That was exhausting.
Yep.
We came back. Billy got sick. I went to Nick's Italian mass party the following weekend and ended up with a sore throat and the sniffles after that.
Yep.
So we've just kind of been recovering and recuperating and had some ideas that we were like throwing around for episodes, various people to get on, and we were just too tired to do any of that.
So our present policy is every other week is sort of like the general structure.
Yes.
But there are some exceptions. One is multi-part episodes, which we might do like successive weeks, and that like resets the timer.
Yep.
Or like super emergency, super timely stuff. Like if we did like a winner's interview from our next tournament and then there was an unban the next day.
Right.
We might zip something out, or like something special, like the EW Everyday Cast.
Yep.
Which was very trying.
Yeah.
We had some equipment issues.
Probably not going to do that one again.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I'll do it. I mean, most of the problem was, because I'm like the most enthusiastic. No, that's not true. That is not giving you credit. I take that back. Everybody has different energy levels. And like some people's, I think that my energy level later in the evening, although I do like go to bed earliest of like the whole gang.
Yeah.
I also don't drink, so it's like y'all are trashed, and then like I'm just, yeah, let's record, and you're like, oh no, I don't, ah, fuck it.
Let's do it drunk.
Yeah, let's do it drunk. And like that's why
it was basically like the thing was just like having to like come home from this like really exhausting day and record and then editing and like doing all that shit like on the fly before then having another exhausting day. It was just like really hard to cram it all, but anyways,
it was emotionally
now that we've established ourselves as a bi-weekly podcast, maybe we should have a little introduction that we record every week. I don't know, is it time for us to,
we've been doing it,
we well, like
every other week, that's unless it's a multi-part, basically. Yeah, no, it's, you will never go more than 2 weeks without hearing what we have to say.
But we should start opening up the episodes like, welcome everybody to Hardcast, a podcast presented by the Duress Crew, your favorite pre-modern bi-weekly podcast.
I guess so. I don't know.
Probably never.
We need no introduction.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
All right.
What do we got to talk about?
So today we just got a couple things on the list. Like I said, this is very much a shooting the shit episode, just hanging out. But it does have some structure. We'll be chatting a little bit about unbans. We're going to be talking about tournament prep and all the hard work we've been putting into things coming up. We are going to touch upon the PDAP, or the pre-modern data project, that, you know, everybody is familiar with at this point. We're going to be talking just a little bit about the Hardcast and what we've been seeing for listenership. And then we're going to touch upon card prices, maybe a little talk about Billy's Terrageddon survival thing that's going on, coming off the heels of our last episode, a Duressipy for those that are with it, and some shoutouts, and then we'll close it all up.
Cool.
Hopefully be in and out rather quickly.
Yeah.
Cool. So unbans, first topic.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
What is the democratic ideal of having the ban or unban policy be a dictatorship?
I'm in favor of it.
You're in favor of it as a dictatorship?
Yes.
I think that there are pros and there are cons.
There certainly is.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it depends highly on the character of the dictator.
And Martin Berlin has excellent character.
So far as we know.
Yeah. Haven't met the guy yet.
I haven't met the guy. I think I've exchanged like literally one message on Discord with the guy.
I sent him a friend request and sent him a message and he never responded to me.
Good for him. Yeah. He knows better. So it's all right, never mind. He's in the clear. Yeah. He knows better than to fuck with you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Not even give me the... Yeah, fuck it. Don't give me the time of day.
Yeah. Keep doing what you're doing. Don't let me distract you.
I think that Martin has proved to be extremely reserved and conservative and thoughtful about all the decisions that he has made thus far. And I really respect his slow, methodical way of handling the format and giving things time to breathe. And I think that the rabble is always overzealous in their opinions. And like, if the rabble had decided the way that this format would go so far, like, we would have Symbiote banned or Cradle banned or something. Like, there's just been all these various points where there's been a top dog and everybody wants to ban some shit, like Oath of Druids would be, just like all these things would be banned right now, and like it would just be a fucking mess.
Oath of Druids is not that good in the meta right now.
No, it's not. And it's just like, it was the boogeyman and then things shook out and people figured out how to beat it, and like, we're past that now.
Yep. Or Oath like just so severely sodomized aggro that it's just like it doesn't exist anymore.
But that's kind of where I wanted to touch upon on bans, is that we are kind of seeing a resurgence, and especially when it comes to black. I feel like black is back right now.
I don't agree.
I think that Oath has been hated out super hard, and I think that Burn has been hated out super hard, and those are the two things that have been oppressing all of these black aggro decks. And we are seeing that without those two decks performing highly right now, the black aggro decks are actually able to hang and win. So like Rochester, Broccoli Soup came out on top.
Yep.
And then there was this big Polish tournament and there was Broccoli Soup and Black Green Pit Rack in the top four.
Okay.
And on MTGO, we're seeing this huge decline of Burn. And yeah, I feel like black is back. Like black green aggro, black green survival, pit wreck, clerics, which I just lost to in the top 16 of my latest pre-modern showdown on MTGO. Zombies is like another excellent deck that can disrupt and put on pressure. And we're seeing that these aggro decks that put on pressure and disrupt at the same time are able to take it to the hole. So
I don't think that I have not taken enough time to research this position, but I think that black is played the correct amount for its strength. And like, I'm dancing around the word underplayed. I don't think black is good. I think that for black to be good, you either need to tone down other things or it needs a buff.
I think that I'm not opposed to any unbans because I like a little shake up in the format every year or so.
Yeah.
But I think that it's going to be pretty hard for Martin to figure out an unban without just unleashing some pure toxicity into the format.
Yep.
And I also don't think that Martin actually has really any idea what to unban personally. That's my personal stance, is that he kind of let the secret slip.
Yeah.
And immediately everybody's like, so what's happening? What's being unbanned? Let's go. Do it right now. And it's like, I think that he let it slip before he really had time to suss it out.
Yep.
And now people want this unban to happen before LobsterCon.
Yep.
And I don't think that he, and this is pure speculation, but I don't think that he actually really knows what he wants to unban right now.
I think that is speculation.
It's pure speculation.
Yes.
Absolutely. But I think that black is actually showing itself to be a pretty good color right now, that maybe it needs a little bit more of a boost, but black decks are performing, and they are especially performing in light of their main adversaries being punched down in the metagame, right? Because the black decks can't beat Sly. They just don't have the tools for it, and they can't beat Oath of Druids really reliably.
Yeah.
Like, you have Dystopia, but Dystopia is a pretty shit guard.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that we're having this conversation at all about a whole-ass color, like, there isn't... Okay, so, like, white has the best card in the format in Swords to Plowshares. And then blue's fucked because it's blue. And then, like, green has...
Terrivore.
Has, it has, like, the Mox, Sylvan Library, Terrivore, Wasteland decks, of which there are two main families, the Oath and the Wayfarer versions, and both have, like, multiple viable brews. And then it also has Survival of the Fucking Fittest and Gaius Fucking Cradle.
Yep.
And then red has Sly and Goblins. And it's like, well, what does... Like, is there a Black Menace deck? When was the last time there was a Black Menace deck? Yawgmoth's Bargain?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily a menace, but I think it's, like, it's well-positioned right now. Like, it's just good against... It's good when Sly and Oath aren't around, basically. Like, it's real... Like, Mono Black decks destroy Terrageddon. I am, like... Zero in X against, like, Mono Black Stompy, yeah. Clerics,
sure.
Zombies.
Yeah.
All these decks are able to just... And, I mean, Black has Cabal Therapy, which the combination of Duress and Cabal Therapy are stellar.
I think... Well, let me...
Withered Wretch is amazing.
Let me frame it like this. If... we were to have a conversation about, like, plausible unbans and what would occur, naming a black card is inherently a dumb and bad take. Like okay, you could say, like, let's ban a white card, like Swords. Okay, Swords is, like, far and away. I mean, I think Swords is the most played card in the format.
Yeah.
Non-land, for certain. And maybe just in general. And, like, that's, like, a real conversation. Like, oh, what would happen? Like, take, like, the best point removal out of white. You could have, like, real conversations about banning Oath or Survival. I'm not saying these are necessarily good outcomes. Just, like, these are, like, it's worth the time to consider the question. It is worth the time to consider the question of banning Tide or Gush. Red and Black, I don't think, have plausible bans.
No.
Yeah, and it's, like... Red at least has a win rate. Like, I guess maybe you could talk about, like, Lackey. Or, like, if the format was like, oh, so are you playing Burn, Goblins, or something else? You know? And then if it got to really be a problem, you could, like, tone it down by banning Fnatic or something like that. But, like, banning anything in black is, like, entirely... it's just such a bad idea.
Yeah.
And the only real conversation would be Duress, I think.
There's nothing.
Dark Ritual.
But,
like, if Black was oppressive, what would you ban? It would be Duress or Dark Ritual, for sure.
Yeah.
But, like, even the decks that play those cards are, like, not that good. Like, Broccoli Soup does not play Dark Ritual.
I think it does.
I don't know.
Might.
I don't know.
It should.
Yeah, I don't know.
Out 6 power turn 1.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just, like, so unintimidated by that deck that I don't even know if it plays either Duress or Dark Ritual. I feel like it probably does play Duress.
Yes. Right. I think. Anyways.
Yeah. Anyways.
Anyways, I think that Black is doing good right now. Is my point.
Yeah.
And I think that whatever gets unbanned is going to be pretty fucking toxic. Like, there's just, like, not really, like, Necropotence is toxic.
Yeah.
Yogg's Will is toxic. Mm-hmm. Entomb is, like, you know, literally, I mean, Entomb is one black instant speed demonic tutor.
I like Entomb.
In the decks that are going to be playing it.
I like Entomb.
Like, that card is fucked up.
All right, so Broccoli Soup indeed plays both 4 Dark Ritual and 4 Duress. Let me see if there's another black card in this top 16. Let me see. Rasko wasn't, Chris Morelli wasn't.
Well, you're going down the rabbit hole deeper than I really care to, but I feel like right now Black's back.
There's a Survival, yeah. Yeah.
I haven't watched Fran's video yet, but he just put out a video as well about Black, and I don't know. I think that Black is looking pretty well poised right now and is not in need of an unban, but I'm in favor of unban because I just like to shake things up, and like if something gets unbanned and it's awful, then you can just reban it again in like a year.
Two things about that. I think Fran is a phenomenal player.
Yep.
And the other thing is that I think that when YouTubers make a video and their deck sucks shit, I think they don't publish.
Yeah, my argument is not based off of Fran.
Okay.
I'm just throwing out that he's also been brewing in the space and it seems cool.
Okay. But yeah. It's also like people are like purposeful. Like nobody goes like ready. Get if like, whoa, somebody's registering swamps, like whoo,
yeah,
like, oh, I feel, what'd you win the lottery yesterday? You know, it's like people make a big deal about playing a swamp in their deck in a way that's like, if one of us showed up to the ELD monthly next weekend and said, I'm playing I have a basic swamp in my deck, and be like, oh, so what do you have plans later? Like, so yeah, anyways,
all right,
yeah. I think all the black, I mean, Yogg-Will, Necropotence, Entomb, I'm willing to suffer a little bit. I'm a proponent of format shakeups.
Yeah, I want Tendrils, personally.
Tendrils would be fine.
I want Storm to be, like, a viable Tier 1 deck. Spell-based combo has been slacking in the format, and for better or for worse, maybe it just makes, like, shit toxic play environment, whatever. I'm still into the idea of it. I would like to see it, and like it would be cool in some like mid-range black decks that just play Tendrils for like 6 damage, you know, some like Negator, Dark Ritual, throw a Tendrils at their face.
I think that any deck that is planning to Tendrils for less than 20 is a bad Tendrils deck and should be playing something else.
Possibly.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like probably wrong, but
like
I want to see it.
There are like cool, like all in red type situations where it's like they do like some sort of weird, like I'll play like a Goblin Guide and a Fire Blast and then like Grape Shot you for 6 and then like swing for 8. You know, like we Dragonauts and like Kiln Fiend style decks.
Yeah.
That's like one thing. I don't think it's.
It's possibly a little overcosted for that play pattern, but hey, man, play a Negator turn 1, and then a couple turns later, like, Ritual, play a Bauble, shoot you for 6. I don't know.
I encourage you to play it. Yeah.
I want to. Yeah. Anyways.
All right.
Are we cool on this topic?
Yeah. I wish there was just, like, a bit more transparency. I wish there was, a decision date that was published.
It would be nice to have a BNR schedule the way that competitive Magic has it.
Yeah, I think they have. The thing is that there's like that has changed over the years, where it was just like once a year, or once per Pro Tour, or once per set release, or what have you. And I think they've changed the policy to be like any Monday at noon Pacific time.
No, I think it's like every 3 months now, or so. I don't know. It's like around releases. I don't even know what. Like I don't follow Magic enough right now.
I don't know, and I'm glad I don't know. But I know that it has changed over the years. I guess I'm just glad. I am. How do I say this? I am against dictatorships in almost any context, but. In this context, because the dictator is so pure and so consistently pure, that I will tolerate this one, if that makes sense. Dictatorships are bad if the dictator makes a mistake, and this one has yet to make a mistake.
I mean, if you want to go play in another playground, anybody is welcome at any time to leave Martin's playground and go make your own playground and like do your own thing, make your own variant. Like, the door has always been there.
Yeah.
You can either open it, close it, do whatever. Like,
Hell yeah, man. Anytime.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, man. Make your own format.
Exactly. Hell yeah. Make your own pre-modern spin-off.
I'll show up.
Do whatever you want.
Yeah. You get my store to fire it, I'll show up.
Right.
And I'll even bring some goodies so other people show up.
Yeah. Next up, we got the PDAP. Just a little update on what's been going on there. Duress Crew has been obviously monitoring the channel on Discord, the thread for the Pre-Modern Data Project, which has had a lot of discourse going on in there lately. We have added the Rochester event. So I believe that was something like 300 matches or so were added from Rochester. Eurodata has been imported somewhat and updated and is reflected now. Jay was somehow able to go back and take LobsterCon 2024 data and restructure all the parent, because like all of the LobsterCon data was lost. And Jay was able to go back and redo the entire thing, and just absolutely insane to me that he was able to do that. But we will be adding LobsterCon 2024 data real soon. And yeah, there's just been a lot of work going into that still. None of it is in my department. I don't know shit about shit when it comes to coding or anything like that, but it's been fun to watch, and figured that we should keep people updated on all that.
It is very interesting. My friends who are smarter than me have taken every tournament gets put into the input bucket in like a different state of quality. And that's one of the major things. It's like the smaller a tournament is, the less impactful the data will be in terms of like giving us like information, like usable information.
Right.
So if you want to give us results from your 8-person tournament, that's cool and we appreciate the energy, but we are not presently properly set up like to incorporate that data. Like, when you submit a deck list on MTG Top 8, it's just, like, you got slots, you can, you know, click 8, 16, whatever, and then you just drop in the deck lists, and it has, like, a data cleanliness automated features, and it's fairly painless. And then there's just, like, a brief review by one person, I suspect. I don't actually know how it works. But, like, we're still figuring ours out. So if we're going to work on data cleanliness, it needs to give us, like, 250 match results before we start to give a shit.
Yeah, was there a number that Nick and Brendan had thrown out, as and Jay, obviously? Like, is there a number of tournament participants, like, a minimum that they're looking for? I want to say it was, like, 40 or something.
I don't remember. I think that our patience to work, none of this is official, this project doesn't belong to me, but my impression is that their patience to clean up data goes up much higher if it's above 64 people.
Okay, yeah.
And if it's like a championship, it's like we would work much harder. If you had, because it's how much work do you have to do to automate to clean up the data? This, if you want your events to go into the PDAP, the single best thing you can do is use Spice Rack. You want your data in there. You want us to like not brush you back. Spice Rack. That's how you do it. Oh, can I put this data in? The answer is probably no. If you use Spice Rack, the answer is probably yes. And there is a willingness to do a bit more handholding if it's a big tournament.
Yeah.
So you want to contribute? Use Spice Rack. That's it.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple other programs too that I'm not familiar with, but
yeah.
Gatherer is not one of them, to say the least. Gatherer, you're not able to export the data. So if you are running larger tournaments and you want your data to be included in the PDAP, you should be using Spice Rack or an alternative tournament software that allows the exportation of data.
I know that Spice Rack is like the official answer.
Yeah.
I don't know if there are other less official answers.
Yeah.
But
Spice Rack is what we like. We're always going to be standing for Spice Rack. Yep. They rule. We obviously want them to stay in business.
They're cool people too.
They are great. They're very
responsive.
Yeah, exactly. They're very responsive when you hit them up.
Yep.
Very willing to talk about everything. Very transparent.
Yep.
Just really great with their technical support when it comes to their events and answering questions and everything. And yeah, they're what we like, and we want them to stay in business. So we're personally paying out of pocket to run all the data through, or we're running our entire tournament through Spice Rack for our next regional. And we're doing that all out of pocket on our own so that we're able to save these tournament results, because the store was going to use Gatherer. And the store is actually still having everybody sign up in Gatherer so that they can get their numbers up. But then you're just going to like enter your info into Gatherer. They're going to fire a fake tournament, and we're going to run everything through Spice Rack out of pocket. And I think it cost us like just shy of $100.
Yep. Speaking of this, we have some listener comments. You want to hear them? One of them's related.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else you want to say on this topic?
I didn't even know we had listener comments.
Yeah, this is through Spotify. So so we have a few comments. We have three through Spice Rack, or not Spice Rack, Spotify. One is on the Rockin' a Hardcast episode. We have a comment from Nance. That's my brother. Phil rocks. So awesome to hear him talk about something he's so passionate about. Hell you go, yeah. Nance. Hell yeah, Nance.
So sick.
Yeah.
I played Nance in Rochester, actually.
Really?
And that's the guy that I played in round six to get into top eight, where I punted and literally won by a turn in time, where I would have been otherwise dead. But yeah.
Nance?
I can't remember Phil's actual last name.
Stoltz.
One of those. Yeah. The Stoltz brothers are cool people.
I don't know if this may be a Stoltz sister. I'm not sure. I don't know. It could be a Stoltz neither. But Nance is what they go by on
Thanks,
Spotify.
Nance.
Thanks, Nance. Thanks for listening. Next comment is Zach Murphy on the PDAP episode. Wild question, but is the repo public? I said no, but that may come later.
Yeah. Really. There's been a lot of questions about being able to access the behind the scenes data. My understanding is that the boys don't want to do tech support is basically where they're at right now. They don't want to have to put the data out there and then have people hitting them up all the time asking all these questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's at least that much. The other one is that like putting the quote unquote, I don't know what a repo is. I'm going to guess that it's short for repository. And I think that Zachary Murphy is speaking to like, hey, can I get this pile of raw data? And I think the first question is, no, I don't want to do tech support. Another one is, there is like a user privacy question, because some of the data is European and we do scrub that data. That's like, people bring up player ELO and things like that. We have a significant amount of data from places with different laws and different customs that protect players' identities, and we can't really do that.
Yeah, suffice to say that player data is never coming through us.
Yeah, cool. And it's just like, I think it also might be an issue of... the internet is a series of tubes, and you have to pay for how much you pump through those tubes, and we're not gonna cover that. Like maybe if you make like $1,000 donation to Worcester County Food Bank or something, like I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. Don't even
put the idea in anybody's head.
Yeah, that's not happening. Never mind. Yeah. So the answer is no. The repo is not public. It's very private.
That could change in the future, depending on what Nick and Brendan and Jay want to do, but yes, moving on.
Next listener comment is from Maximilian Welch on the last episode on Terrageddon. Maximilian says, love the episode. One question. Do we need this much swearing?
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah, we do. All right, so those were listener comments so far. We do have a voicemail box, which I have checked, and there has been voicemails.
Really? There was more than Carl?
Well, I didn't want to... Yes, Carl.
We shouted out Carl already once on the podcast saying that he sent it in.
Yeah. We'll play those maybe when we get some more. We'll do like a... But there's mail in our mailbox. Go to... What is it? Speakbox?
Yeah, we can post it with the episode.
Yeah, I'll put it in the episode notes. If you want to leave us like If you just want to talk shit, we don't care. We'll play it.
Talk shit, ask questions, whatever. Yeah, we've been pretty lazy about promoting that.
Yeah.
Because it's just another thing.
Speak pipe.
Yeah.
Speak pipe.
We've been pretty lazy about promoting it because it's just another thing to think about and do and incorporate. And if you can't get the vibe already, we're pretty worked out. So
This is one of the things about Duress Crew is like for anything that anybody has ever heard about, there's several other ideas that have flopped. Like we used to do like streaming like twice a week.
Right.
And that was
twice
like
a month.
Yeah. That we like wanted to do. But we're just like too fucking tired.
Honestly. Like,
yeah.
It would be nice to bring back the, maybe do them like once a month or something like that. But yeah, that was a lot of work, man. Yeah, we had to set up the rig and we had to set up the booth and you got to get everybody into Nick's house.
Yep.
And it was just a lot. And it was fun while it lasted. And I would like to maybe bring it back after LobsterCon, you know, once a month type of thing. But
that would be a cool thing to have like a scheduled, like, that would be pretty, like, a scheduled house stream.
Yeah.
And then it's, like, just, like, get the whole gang, get some Australian dry rubs, and just do it.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is we can, like, really only kind of do it at Nick's house, because that's where all of our gear lives. And then, you know, my house is too small, Pat's is too small.
My house
Your house is conceivable, but then it's Nick has to lug all of it over, and it's just, like, no.
Yeah, it's
it ain't happening. It ain't happening, Chief.
Yeah. If we can get, once I buy an actual computer that works, and if we get a second camera and I buy a computer, because it's not really, the scaffolding is pretty reasonable to have, like, hang out, you know, like the recording equipment. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
But it's like taking possession of somebody else's personal computer is one thing, and taking possession of somebody's like nice camera is also another thing. So those are like the real two questions. I think the scaffolding can like hang out in somebody's trunk. Like, who's got it? Like, oh, I've got it. Oh, I can drop it off. That's less of a big deal. But yeah, a laptop and a camera is like an entirely different deal.
Yeah.
Because it's like each of those are $1,500 plus. So
yeah, exactly.
All right. Cool.
So we've already been chatting a little bit about the podcast, but Billy, you wanted to talk about who has been listening to the podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So this is really neat. So I got this little map here. All right, so we published this. We pushed the episodes through two services, Spotify and this other thing called RSS. So RSS is this, like, hyper-standardized, like, internet distribution machine that you can... It's like a format that pushes things to other services. So, like, it can push to Spotify, it can push to Apple, it can push to, like, I don't know, like, whatever pod service. They all have funny names, like, let's see here, like, Podmate or whatever, like, Podzilla and all that shit. I don't care. But one of the features is that there's a, depending on which ISP you download from, it kind of gives me an idea where you're from. It's not like your street address. Like, if I zoom in on Worcester, like, I can't. It's not even like in my neighborhood, even though like I listen to it. Is it, how close is it? Yeah, it pins it to probably about 10 blocks from my house. So I'm scrolling through it right now. We have some listeners from like all over the place. Like there's one, there's a listener from Westboro. Hi, Mom. and so there's like, I don't know, I can see a lot of stuff. So, it's kind of neat. Like, we are mostly up and down, like, the I-95 corridor, because we're, like, very East Coast-centric, and then whatever it is that goes across New York. So there's, like, Syracuse, Rochester, all that stuff, which is neat.
I want to hear about the far away people.
Yeah, yeah. So if you reach out to us on Discord if you're from any one of these places, because I want to hear about, like, what pre-modern is like in these places. So, like, we kind of live and die. Like, our pre-modern community is basically the Discord, the main PM Discord. And when I say main PM Discord, that really only speaks to the Anglosphere, Scandinavia, and Germany. Those are, like, the most vocal people on it. but there's like nobody in France listens to our podcast. Like there's three people in France have listened to our podcast. There's one in Turkey. There's one in Singapore, which I know there's like a whole PM scene in Singapore, but we have a listener there.
Yep.
We have three or four in New Zealand. We have one listener on the western coast of Australia in Perth. And then like United States, one in South Africa, a handful in South America. South Africa might be Lesotho. Nope. It's in Durban. That player is in Durban. Okay, so I'm like particularly interested in hearing about if you are the Dublin listener or if you are the Cork listener. I would be very interested in hearing about like what's PM like in Ireland.
Yeah.
I think that's like the most far away like PM.
You said New Zealand too, right?
Yeah, but I mean to say like I'm aware of the Australian scene. I'm like not at all aware of anything to do in Irish PM scene.
Yeah.
So this is really speaking to like mostly English speakers.
Yeah, send us a speak pipe.
Let us know what's a speak pipe.
And tell your friends too. I'm surprised that there's not more in South America because South America has such a big pre-modern scene.
Well, the thing is that like this is an English speaking podcast.
It's true.
Although like loads of South Americans speak English. I don't know if like South Americans tend to speak Spanish as their second language or Portuguese as their second language. Shout out to French Guiana. I know that you speak French down there. But there's, I don't know how common speaking English is.
Yeah.
As opposed to like in like Scandinavia where like everybody speaks English as a second language.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. I want to hear about it. It's cool. And tell your friends too.
Yeah. Tell your
Promote friends. Us around.
Yeah.
We're trying to bump these numbers up. We're trying to get official.
Yeah. Tell
trying to get some sponsorships.
Tell your amigos.
Tell your wife.
Yeah. Let's see here. Cool.
And the other thing that I wanted to touch upon too is like, I started looking at TC decks again recently because I kind of just stopped.
Yep.
And just kind of stopped keeping up with what was going on. But I started looking at TC decks again and I was like, wow, there's some big tournaments going on that, not big, you know, in the hundreds, but these regular 30 person plus meetups.
Yeah.
That's a good size to me. We get stoked.
That's
here. Like
a, that's an active scene. That
yeah.
If you're putting on 30 plus, that is an active, competent, self-sufficient, developed, healthy scene.
Yeah. And there's all these tournaments going on and I have no idea where they're happening. Like Pre-Modern and Friends was one that I saw that regularly breaks 30 people.
Where is that?
I have no idea. I'm like, this is really cool though. And part of it, of course, is that so much of the discourse for this format in other countries happens off of Discord and Facebook. They use WhatsApp.
Yeah. Okay.
So
yeah.
We are not privy ever to seeing any of the discussions that are happening in these other countries.
Yep.
But it's just, it's been cool looking at it again and being like, wow, like this format is popping off in a lot of places and people are getting big turnouts, you know, turnouts that we're stoked to get for our monthlies.
Yep.
So yeah, it's sick.
Hell yeah.
So if you're in any of these places, share us around, hit us up. We want to hear about it. We're interested.
Yeah. If you're not Canadian, American, Scandinavian, German, or Benelux.
Yeah. If you're any of those people, don't hit us up.
Yeah. We don't care about you. Like you have like interesting, your scenes are like within our sphere of influence. But if you're in Turkey, like I want to. Or, no, it's Greece. You're in Greece, dear listener. You're in, I think, in Athens? That's cool. Let's see here. We have a listener way up in the north of Norway, in Tromsø. I've been to Tromsø.
I don't even know where that is.
It's in the way north. I've been on top of Mount Ulriken.
Wow.
Yeah, in Tromsø. It's a beautiful city.
Cool.
Very clean.
Shall we proceed?
We shall.
Okay. Yep. Another thing that I wanted to touch upon was card prices.
Yep.
Card prices for pre-modern are going absolutely buck wild these days.
Yep.
And this format was so cheap when I got into it 5 to 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the best example I can give is Call of the Herd.
Yep.
Call of the Herd Gold Border has a buy list of $4 at Card Kingdom, which is like above $5 when you turn it in for credit and then sell the credit.
Yes.
I used to give away gold border playsets to my homies when they need to call the herds. I just be like, yeah, have a playset. Like, this is a quarter.
The idea of gold border now being a premium printing is, I think it's cool.
It is, but it's just wild to me.
I think it's hard because it's like, oh, I'm choosing to invest in this one way. It's almost like, it's not quite the same as putting like a whistle tip on your car, but it's, or like, like filing down the hammer on your Uzi. but it is investing in a culturally held contempt for wizards and saying like, I know this is against the rules and I'm doing it anyways. And this is like a cool thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that also now it's really being targeted by the MTG finance community.
Yes.
Like, I'm seeing posts about pre-modern. Like, when I just scroll through Reddit, I'm subscribed to the MTG finance subreddit. So I just kind of see things in passing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a pretty good amount of posts recently from the MTG finance subreddit talking about pre-modern.
Yeah.
And I think that the format has not only been circling the drain for the past 5 years as everybody picks up their 2 to 3 playsets of Call of the Herd, 2 to 3 playsets of Terravor, and all these staples in the format, but also now the finance speculators are catching on to how big this format is becoming and realizing that players in the format want these old cards, and for somebody to go in and buy out Gold Border, Call of the Herd, or Parallax Tide, or any of that is negligible.
Yep.
You know, it's like maybe there's 20 copies and they're like $2 each.
Yep.
They can just go in and swipe that up, no problem. Yep. And now the supply is just gone.
Yep.
And the floor has been raised to whatever they want to list it at. And if people start buying them, then the floor is real.
Yeah.
Like, this new floor is real. So it's been, I have just such mixed emotions about it because I loved how underground the format was and how cheap everything was when I was buying in. You know, I was getting old border pain lands for like $1 a pop and calls for a quarter and Terravores for $1. And now they're actually like real money. And
the pain lands have cycled in and out of standard though.
That is part of it.
Yeah. And I think that is like, I mean, there's actually 100 standard players for every or more. Perhaps 1,000 standard players.
Right.
For every PM player.
For every pre-marauder.
Yeah, pre-marauder. Yeah. So that I think that that's a factor, but like...
Yeah, the Painlands are a bad example. But
which is $14 now.
Yeah.
13.
And foils, CK, I was like looking at CK out of curiosity. They didn't have any in stock, but a near mint foil Exalted Angel from Card Kingdom is $200.
Was it like 45 a couple years ago?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So like, and like their buy list was like over 100 for near mint. So it's just crazy what's been going on with it. And I think I don't want to stir the speculator pot. Obviously nobody that is into speculating and buying shit out listens to our podcast. But for the players that listen, I don't want to spark any sort of buying frenzy, but I do want to say, like, look around for deals, and if there's something you've been thinking about getting, maybe try and get it sooner than later.
I think that is probably true. I think a lot of PM players remember, I feel like the old heads remember when you could play a Legacy weekly, get yours for a duel, you know, or like get enough credit that you could like mostly get a duel. You and I come from like the history of like that's entertainment Legacy weeklies, and it's like you would play 5 rounds, split top 4, and then everybody would walk away with like at least a non-blue duel, and then if you played it out, whoever won walked away with a blue duel.
Yeah.
And like that was pretty sick, and like a lot of people, you know, you play Legacy for a year and then you're like, oh, I got, you know, 11 dual lands this year because I like showed up with like meta decks and like played hard, or that you could show up with like burn with like street wraiths to cycle through it just so you could, like, get enough credit and just roll the dice.
Yep.
And be like, oh, like, hell yeah, like, I got good pairings and, like, now I have a trop and I'll play, I don't know.
Infect.
Yeah. And I think this kind of reminds me of Legacy in, not 2009, but in 2011.
Yeah. When
it's like, okay, like, Underground C, because it was $40 for the non-blue ones. And then the blue ones were...
like 100-ish.
Well, I'm thinking like... even 2009, a little less. 2009, 2010. The non-blue ones were $40. The blue ones were 50, except for Underground Sea, which was 60.
Okay.
And that, it was like that for like a year.
Yeah.
And and like a year later, Underground Sea was $100. And that's kind of where I feel like we're at. Where it's like Underground Sea is now $100. And don't get me wrong, like, these cards don't have the same price memory, but I think that there are things where, like, a gold border cradle is not going to be... how much are those now? Like, 160?
Yeah, probably around there.
Yeah.
Like, the floor is 100.
Yeah. A good example would be Dreadnought. Dreadnought's a perfect example, where it's, like, it was $80 for, like, 2 years.
Yeah.
It was nothing for the longest time.
Yeah.
You know, it was like $20-$30 and people would like brew with it, you know, like you'd have your kitchen table friend be like, I'm gonna do this now.
Yeah.
And Sutured Ghoul with it or Stifle it on in kitchen table non-PM Magic.
Right.
And now it's they're not fucking with it. Like
they're anymore. Up.
Yeah.
They're up.
Like 130.
Elite now they're like over that. They're like 175, like.
Alright, I am never playing Dreadnought.
Yeah.
Like I'm not fucking with this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna buy, you know, like, Survival was $80? Sorry, no, I'm an idiot. Yeah, I don't know. Who cares?
Irregardless. Yeah. Not trying to stir any pots, not trying to make things go crazier than they're going, but all I'm going to say is keep your eyes out. If there's something you're looking for, look for a nice deal, and maybe scoop it up sooner than later, because the drain has certainly been circling for a long time now. And if the finance community is going to start putting eyes on this shit, then we can expect to just see more of the same of things going up. And yeah.
Speaking of stirring the pot, do a recipe?
Sure.
All right. So this episode's do a recipe is how to jazz up ramen. So it's a snow day here in Worcester. And I had a wonderful morning. And I shoveled snow, went to the rock gym, did a little bit of climbing. Went shopping a little bit, and I was like, oh, I want something nice and warm and filling. And I was like, what do I have here? And I have a fridge full of vegetables, and I had some ramen. Like your standard 89-cent pack of ramen.
This is the college special.
But it's better than that, because the thing is that it's only, like, wretched college student food if you don't do anything to it.
If you just stir an egg into it,
and not call even it a day. Just if you just put like the noodles in the packet, I feel to me that is the same as just like eating a slice of like sliced sandwich bread, where it's like, I mean, I guess it's food, but is this all you aspire to? You know, like, how little do you think of yourself? And you, dear listener, deserve the best. So, this is what I did when you're jazzing up ramen. We're going to talk about vegetables first. There are three timestamps for putting a vegetable in with a ramen. One, if the vegetable is like really hearty and fibrous, you put it in when the water is cold before the boil. And then timestamp two is if the vegetable is a weak vegetable, like bell peppers or tomatoes. And then the last is if you're looking for that crunch. And that's, you put it in when you put the noodles in. So there's before the boil, with the noodles, or right at the moment of serving. So today I put in carrots and onions and very thinly sliced ginger and radish into my ramen. And then when I put the noodles in, I put in bell pepper. And at the moment of serving, I cut up some green onion, aka chive, aka scallion. And I just sliced that up in there, and it was crunchy, it was refreshing, having two types of onion and radish, and
gets you hydrated.
It gets you hydrated. And the ginger, it was just like eating a bowl of soup that has ginger in it. It just like, it wafts this ginger up over your face as you're like shoveling your pie hole, and just clears your sinuses out. It's very pleasant. I can imagine that if I ever have kids, I'm going to feed them, you know, ginger soup, because it's just having this steaming bowl of gingery broth. It's quite pleasant.
Get your immune system going.
I also put arugula in, like I before, like right before I put, I dosed it up to eat. I put arugula in the bowl, and it just like very lightly blanched the arugula, so it was like softened up the tips, but the stems were still crunchy. It was just like refreshing and warm, and I got my veggies in it. It was really good, and like it took not even 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like I put the water on to boil, carrots and onions in right away, and then I spent, while I was waiting, instead of watching this pot, I diced up veggies and I just put them in order of how robust they were, and it was quite good.
You want to hear my recipe?
Yeah. Well, what is it, ramen related?
No.
Well, hang on.
Okay.
Something, thank you. Something else you can do, you can just like dice up tofu and just toss it in there. I don't really know how to cook tofu that well. Sometimes I marinate it. You can take like any sort of cooked leftover thing. So if you have like leftover chicken, you can just like shred it up on the cutting board, toss it in there. I occasionally put salmon in there. You can buy frozen shrimp at the grocery store, and if it's pre-cooked, you can just toss it in there and just use the boiling process as like the thawing process. It's pretty forgiving.
Yeah, I feel like this is all to say that soup is quite easy to make.
Soup is much easier to make than you think. And ramen, a ramen packet with a fuck ton of vegetables in it is actually quite enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
You can also crack an egg in it.
Yeah, and straight you should. Up. Yeah. You
should. It really...
Right at the end.
Right at the end.
So what you actually want to do is you crack the egg and you whisk it.
Yep.
And then you stir the pot in like a clockwise motion. And you slowly pour in the egg, and that's how they make egg drop soup, and you get this really nice texture with the egg as it swirls around and cooks, and you get those nice stringy egg pieces.
Do you put it, is it while the water is boiling?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So like right when you, right before, probably right before you drop the noodles in, right?
Same time is fine.
Same time?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Hell yeah. So hit us.
All right, so my recipe that I've been making a lot this winter is collard greens. And collard greens are so easy to make and so good for you. And I'm just super into them this winter.
I don't know a damn thing about collard greens.
Yeah, southern delicacy, really easy to make. I make mine... I mean, so like the proper way to do it is you're like, you're supposed to get some brisket and you're supposed to get all this nice fatty meat in the bottom of the pot. And I don't fuck with that because I don't really buy meat that much. But I've just been doing... You can do them vegan, vegetarian, or you can use a nice beef broth.
Yep.
But literally, you just dice up a bunch of garlic, dice up a bunch of onion, throw that in the pan, saute it for a little bit.
With oil.
Yeah, with oil.
Yeah.
While that's going, you take your collards, just chop off that big, crunchy bottom stem, and then just give them a coarse dice.
Yep.
Throw them into the pot. Mm-hmm. Saute them a little bit, stir them up, you know, get the oil and everything all nice and mixed up.
Mm-hmm.
And then once those have got a nice little saute happening, you just douse it in whatever broth you would like, whether it's beef broth, chicken stock, you know, better than bouillon mixed with some boiling water.
Yep.
And then you hit it with a little bit of apple cider vinegar.
Okay.
Throw whatever seasonings you want. Like I just do onion powder and garlic powder and just like layer the top of it so it's got a nice... You know, nice big smear of that on top of it, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
And then you literally let it cook for like 45 minutes to an hour and a half. And it's just done, and it's amazing when it comes out. You have this nice hearty broth that's mixed up with the collards.
So you are doing a stir fry of greens to get an initial cook. And then you add broth afterwards.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say a stir fry though. Like you want to get the onions and the garlic sauteed up a little bit.
Okay.
And then you just kind of want to throw in the collards, roughly chopped,
Yeah.
And just get a little bit of a saute, you know, and just get all that flavor mixed up.
Yeah.
But then you're just pouring broth over it with the apple cider vinegar and some seasonings.
Okay.
I like to throw in a nice tablespoon at least of butter because that's kind of where you're getting that, just a nice rich flavor that the meat would give you if you were doing this like the Southern authentic style.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, and so just like a tablespoon of butter and then you just let it go for like an hour minimum.
Okay.
And so you can prepare this and then do whatever else you want on the side. And you have all of this time to work with while these are cooking to make whatever you want on the side, whether it's meat, tofu, rice, whatever. But that's it.
Hell yeah.
And collard greens, they'll give you the best poops of your life.
Yep.
They're super nutritious, super fibrous, just good eating. And you just get this nice broth too that comes with it. And it's just great.
Yeah.
Just wonderful and so easy.
One of the funny things about the way meat, you and I eat quite similarly, in that we just like to have like a huge fucking pile of vegetables.
Yeah.
Just like just pile them on. You can eat any amount of vegetables and it's healthy.
Right. Yeah. 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 And I mostly just cook with tofu.
Yeah.
I don't buy meat too much. I usually just eat it when I go out or I'm with friends or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the most part, just keep it simple. But man, collard greens, A+.
Yep.
Can't go wrong.
Yeah.
And you just can't fuck it up if you tried.
How much does it end up as a soup, or is it like collard greens sitting in? So you have, let's say you have an inch of collard greens in this like wide, tall rimmed frying pan, right?
You could do it in a frying pan. I do it in a
saucepan,
a Dutch oven, because you can use those on the stovetop.
Okay.
But so you don't want to drown them. I just basically fill up the liquid until it's at the same level as the collards.
Got it. Okay, cool. Okay, yeah. That was the thing, because like, is it a soup or is it more of a stir fry, or like what does it look like? Okay, so it's sopping, but it's not a soup.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay, cool.
Yep.
Cool. Hell yeah. Cool. That's it. That's it for the recipe.
Cool. And we're going to take a quick five.
Taking a little break. All right, we'll be back with more stuff to talk about.
All right, and we are back from our little coffee break.
Yep.
And
full
I think
cups.
The last thing that we have to talk about tonight is Billy's new little Terrageddon survival thing that he's got going on. So
yeah. So
tell us about it, Billy.
This is like kind of like a little postscript. Our big episode is that there's still so much room to brew in this archetype, and this is just like a little project I've been working on. I'm kind of spilling the beans here, but it's magic. It's all gonna get spread everywhere. So this is definitely okay. So what I've been up to lately is I've been experimenting with seeing if survival of the fittest should or can go into Terrageddon.
The ye old tradition of putting survival into a green deck and seeing what happens.
Yeah, and it's been very interesting. I am currently, let's see here, I went 2-1 and then 3-1. So I'm currently 5-2 with this, on this idea. And it's not, that's not a big data set. You know, I could immediately go, you know, 2-5.
Yeah.
Like there is no reason to believe that this is good. None.
It's just interesting.
It's just really interesting.
And it's fun to talk about.
And it is very fun to talk about. So, I was looking at... I actually have the fittest. I had this pulled up, so I'm actually being like the worst little goblin here. Armageddon. And then... Terror. So I'm looking this up on MTG Top 8. So... this is not my original idea. There was like kind of like an angry hermit situation. Actually, hang on, that's totally off topic. But in pre-modern, this is something that has existed in the Hispanosphere. So like notably Technoliga, Andres Torres has worked on this a couple years ago and a little bit recently. And somebody else did it in like, there's only like 7 lists here from like since 2022. Although I'm not certain if that's when like MTG Top 8 started tracking pre-modern.
Yeah.
Probably. That's probably more likely than not. I'm certain other people have tried this. But it's really interesting. So, Brad, let me ask you. I'm going to ask you to name cards and an amount of those cards that, like, you are an ignorant asshole if you are not playing this card in Terrigen. Like,
okay.
To be a functional Terrigen deck that matches the archetype description, you have to play this card. So I'll start you off with, I'll lead you. You have to have 4 Swords to Plowshares and 4 Terror.
Yep.
What else do you need?
Weathered Wayfarer, 4x.
4x, okay.
Armageddon, at least 3.
Okay.
Probably a couple Sylvan Libraries.
Okay.
I guess...
How many Mox Diamonds?
4 Mox Diamonds.
4 Mox Diamonds. Don't even fuck with it. The card's insane.
That's kind of where the buck ends, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as long as you get those going. Yeah.
Yeah. So, with that all in mind, we have 8... I'm futzing with cards in front of myself right now. So, 8... 12, 16. We have, like, depending on how many lands you want to play, we have, like, 10 to 20 slots left to play with. And it's like, okay, like, we have played around with, okay, after those cards, what do we do? Okay, Meddling Mage, okay, Call of the Herd, Anyward Brushhopper, Sylvan Safekeeper, Exalted Angel, Goose, Werebear. There's all these, like, valid things that you can play, and they're all good, and they're different environments. But I came to this thought that, like, the Sylvan Library games are so different than the non-Sylvan Library games in Terrigen. And in survival decks, the survival games are so different from the non-survival games. And what I am looking to do here is build a survival deck that functions without survival. Then it's just a Terrigen deck.
Yeah.
And, like, in a Terrigen deck, it's just adding more copies of Sylvan Library, which doesn't stack that well. And to be real, neither does Survival. But Survival is like a pretty fucked card when you have it and it's active. So after you add 4 Survival and a Squee, because that's, like,
mandatory.
Hard mandatory. That's, like, the card that fucks it all up, makes it all fucked up. I'm, like, experimenting, like, okay. And there's some, like, very interesting conceptual overlap where, like, people have played Birds of Paradise as, like, redundant. As redundant Mox Diamonds. Not redundant, but yeah. Additional Mox Diamonds. And, like, that's not that crazy. Like, so I've been playing that with this deck with, like, okay, let's add 4 Birds of Paradise to this. And then 4 Survival and a Squee. And I just have, like, 9 slots left. Or I have 9 slots because I've chosen to play 21 lands.
21, wow.
Yeah. Okay. Is that low or high?
It's low for Terrigen, but it maybe is appropriate for a survival deck.
So this is very interesting where it's like, why is it low?
Because Terrigen is looking to hit land drops every single turn. And is looking to do that on top of discarding lands to Mox Diamonds.
Yeah.
And is also looking to be able to bounce right back into the game after an Armageddon.
Yep. But what if 4 of those lands are Birds of Paradise? Then that's like 25. Right? And it's like you really just need that first land to feed to Mox Diamond. Like, okay, you do want to hit your land drops every turn. But it's like, okay, well, what if it's a Birds of Paradise? Like, what does that do? And it's been very interesting. It's been very, very interesting. I have no idea what I'm doing because I've never played a survival deck before. It is really hard.
To, like, pinpoint your slots?
Yeah. Yeah. So I am presently keeping this to... I've played it once as just straight green-white with 4 Werebears. And then I realized how fucked up having a Wall of Roots, a port, and a survival is.
Yeah.
Being able to survive on your turn for what you want and then port them off that Wall of Roots. Yes, it does expend it, but, like, if you have 2 turns where you've ported them twice and then you've survived twice,
Yeah.
You are so damn ahead.
Yeah.
You are so far ahead. It is very effective. And it's been kind of neat. I've really been enjoying brewing with it. And what's notable here is that, okay, so like the other big one of for survival targets is Vigilante. And then Sylvan Safekeeper is also very good. And then now I have this like spread of like cards that I have no clue what I want to play. I'm playing a Wall of Roots, a Wall of Blossoms, and a Werebear because I have no idea which one of them is good yet.
Yeah.
Werebear's been interesting because like chaining, you just play these Werebears and you just keep chaining them into each other. And then you just go like, oops, cycle a bunch of cards into your graveyard. Like just pitch a bunch of Birds of Paradise or whatever in there. And like now you have 4/4/4s. Like that's how I beat Dreadnought at a house game a couple weeks ago. Was I just like kept getting Werebear. Like, I'm not going to counter this Werebear. It's like, I'm saving my counter spells for swords and naturalize or whatever. Like, oh shit, now you can just trade 3 Werebears for a Dreadnought.
Yeah.
And I'm fucked. Like, shit, what do I do? So that's been kind of interesting. I have been enjoying playing a Exalted Angel. Because I just like, oh, sweet, you nuked my graveyard, or my graveyard is not developed yet, or I'm playing against aggro, and I'm in a situation where I could not attack with Terravor. This Exalted Angel's been sick. And I have 2 more creatures that I'm like not really sure about. One is Brushhopper, and the other is Baloth.
Both reasonable.
Yeah, like they're both totally reasonable. And
I like Brushhopper because you can pitch your squee to it, mm-hmm. plus like another card.
Yeah, and that seems quite good. Like maybe you aren't up to dicking around with survival yet, but like squee with Hop Daddy seems pretty problematic.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
you can do stuff like just untap it if you want to. Like that might be a good use of your time. And Baloth, I'm kind of iffy on. I do like having a second life gain source. Because what can happen with Burn is that they, like, just go all in and kill your Angel. And, like, you made them discard 2 or whatever. Like, that's cool that you got a Seal of Fire and a Bolt out of them. But having another life gain source and also, like, an on-the-board 4-4 is a very big deal. You know?
Yeah.
Like, you can... Like, it holds you off from getting trampled by elephants very effectively.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm still figuring out what's going on. Do I want a Genesis? Do I want a Karmic Guide and like an Achroma? Like that can be cool.
Yeah.
Some interesting things have been happening. There is like an absolutely fucked play pattern if you have a bunch of Wall Roots in the deck. Where if you have just survival, you go get a Safekeeper and a Wayfarer, and then you start chaining Wall of Roots. And with Safekeeper, you can always stay down on lands. And then you can actually lock somebody out, not during their upkeep, whatever, they still have that, and they still have their land drop, but you can lock them out on CMC 2 and above sorceries, you know, creatures, artifacts, enchantments, all that, up to their 4th non-basic and up to their 4th basic.
Yeah.
Because, like, and they can't fuck with it because you have Safekeeper. You're always going to be lower than lands on them because of Safekeeper, and you can, like, you can assemble this all from, like, a single survival and a single green source, because you go get birds to like sort it all out if you don't have any other lands, and you end up in this situation where you can spend like white for a Wayfarer activation, a green for a survival, a green for a Wall of Roots because it pays itself half of itself back, and then a land drop, and then you can like just spend like effectively white green green to just chain Stone Rains.
Yeah.
Because you're just, and it, like, it only works if you have 4 Wasteland, 4 Port, which you can do in a straight green white deck.
Yeah.
It's been very, very interesting. It doesn't seem atrocious, but there's going to be growing pains with this.
Like, yeah.
I got Goblins because I can't play Pyroclasm with a bunch of birds.
Yep.
That's one issue. I went to our weekly yesterday and like was scared of Nick Mayo, who was on elves, and I'm like, shit, what am I gonna do?
Because I can't
totem.
Yeah,
I can't pyroclasm. It's like, do I play Cataclysm?
Yeah,
but it's like he's just a better survival deck. Like,
right?
What do I even do here?
Yeah, and lose, like, pretty
yeah,
much. Lose,
yeah. One thing I was thinking about was getting a Rithskrove in here and going back to... So my mana base currently is 4 Brushland, 2 Plains, 2 Forest, 4 Windswept Heath, and then for utility lands, like, again, like, you are high unless you are playing 4 Wasteland and at least 1 Treetop Village.
Yep.
I think that multiple... Don't get me wrong, in, like, a non... In a deck that's not a blend of the two, I think multiple Treetop Village is definitely better. I would play 3 before I played 1 in normal Terrigan.
Yep.
But it's like the deck ain't... You get so much more spread off your Wayfarer just by having a Treetop Village in the deck.
Yeah.
And then lastly, it is the 2-color deck's privilege to play 4 Rishadin Port.
Hot.
And it's important because you... there's all these weird play patterns that come up, like... Survivaling for Birds of Paradise so that you can just like hard lock somebody out with 4 ports, 4 wastelands in your deck. And also, like, your Geddens are disgusting because you're Geddening with, like, oh, I have Wall Roots, Birds, Wayfarer, Mox. Yeah. And I'm going to Gedden. I never had a land to begin with in this game, and it's no big deal. So, like, just one sided Geddens or Geddens for like 1, maybe 2 lands. Being able to, like, put a bunch of walls out. And then, like, oh, weird, I'm at 6 mana. I'm just going to go get and hard cast an Exalted Angel, which happened all the time, like, very quickly, too, off 4 birds, 4 Mox. And the ability to get both lands with Wayfarer and mana with Survival. It's been really interesting.
Yeah.
I'm excited to figure this out.
Yeah. I don't want to go too deep because we're already over an hour, but it's...
You're not that interested in this.
No. I think that it's cool. I just don't want to necessarily do a whole deck and go for another hour. So
it's
cool to touch upon it, and it's going to be cool to shake it out and brew it up a little bit more and see what happens with it. It's a fun experiment.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you think? Red for Flame Tongue Khufu or blue for Meddling Mage?
Blue. Yeah. Just chain like Meddling Mages.
That seems like big game against combo. Like 4 Wasteland, 4 Port, Geddens, Meddling Mage. But then I also...
Or Control, just chaining 3 Meddling Mages in a row against Control, and it's like, you're never casting removal again.
Yes, I did that against Enchantress this past weekend, where it's like, swords. And then it was like, they just saw the writing on the wall and scooped. Like, oh, I mean, do you have 4?
Yeah.
What are you going to name? Enchantress, Enchantress's Presence, Replenish. Like, this game's cooked.
Yep. Sick.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Cool. All right. So, more to come on that, obviously, as this show unfolds in the future.
Yeah. We're going to see how it goes. Yeah. Probably going to play it this weekend.
Hell yeah.
Or next weekend.
Whatever. Yeah, at the monthly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, whatever.
Cool. Any shout-outs you want to give Billy?
Yeah. If you live in the frigid north of New England, New Hampshire or Maine, you should give a look at Full Moon Gaming. I have made a brief shout out before, but I'd like to reemphasize that there is the population and the interest for a PM scene there. They're doing pre-modern every other Sunday. And
this is Full Moon Gaming in Newington, New Hampshire.
Yes. At the Fox Run Mall. The owner, whose name escapes me, he's very responsive. So we all show up like, hey, what do you guys want to do? Do you guys want to do 5 rounds? Do you guys want to do 4 rounds plus cut and then single elimination thereafter? Like, how do you guys want to divvy up the prizes? And he like talks and he listens. So y'all should show up there. There's a bunch of Maine people, a bunch of New Hampshire people. And that's just like a little scene shout out. It's growing. I've been twice, 3 times. And I've had a lot of fun. And it's like 20 something people have been showing up. Which is pretty sick for an every other week, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, that's
a great turnout.
Yeah. Like, our weeklies are, like, 10 to 16, and our monthlies are, like, 20 to 35. So that they can have, like, an every other week being above 20 people is, like, pretty sick.
Yeah.
That's developed, stable, healthy. So show up and pump those numbers up.
Yep.
Hell yeah.
And we'll give a shout out to... our tournament, our next regional, coming up in about 3 weeks from now.
Coming up fast.
Yep, sold out, but we'll have a stream going that you're definitely going to want to check in on.
Twitch.tv /Duress Crew.
Yep, we'll be doing a episode in 2 weeks, coming out on the 27th with Jay, talking about deck selection and a little bit about metagaming and stuff like that. So we'll have kind of a nice episode leading up to it.
Yep.
Just talking about, you know, how to choose a deck for an event, and talking a little bit about the New England metagame and maybe light predictions, whatever, stuff like that. We are also bringing the charity raffle into 2025 by bringing it online. That's something that I need to work on tonight.
Have fun, dude.
Yeah. So we're going to be selling tickets online. We have some really sick prizes lined up for it. By the time this comes out, it will have been posted already. But in my opinion, the sickest prize that we have is a playset of foil shadow signed Duress. So that's going to be the hot ticket item.
Yeah, by Mr. Snelly.
Yep. You're going to get an opportunity to win a piece of Duress Crew merch, if you're so inclined. This is like the first time that we're letting any of our shit out into the wild, basically, besides a small trickle that we've sent out to homies around the country. And yeah, besides that, I think that pretty much wraps it up. We're going to go watch the Super Bowl, watch Kendrick Lamar.
I want to see that. I do not care about football. I care a lot about this.
Yeah, I think that I hate both teams in the Super Bowl, so I'm not super interested, but I'm going to watch it, and I'm excited enough to see the halftime show.
It's the most outrageous flex.
Yeah.
Can you imagine, like, winning, sweeping 5 for 5 Grammys, and then just, like, because Drake wants to go to the Super Bowl.
Right.
It's like a celebrity thing to have Super Bowl tickets. Like, he has to go to, like, keep up his persona as, like, a high roller.
And then the whole stadium of 60 million people is going to be singing They Not Like Us.
Yeah, like, how many people are going to be there? Like, 60,000 people?
I have no idea, whatever.
Then, like, I have no idea. Like, above 10,000, below 100,000.
Yeah.
And then, like, actually 10 to 30% of the fucking country. Oh, my God.
It's going to be tuned in.
I hope he plays that banger, and it's, like, it's too good not to.
Right.
I am interested to see what would happen from, like, public slander laws.
Yeah. He's already being sued for it. Yeah. So it's, the whole thing is some nice juicy drama.
But that is, like, so decidedly, like, not hard.
No.
To sue over a rap battle.
Extremely soft.
Yeah. Christ.
Yeah.
What a loser.
Yeah. So, right. Yeah, cool. All right. Peace out, everybody. Duress Crew signing off. This has either been our worst or best episode. If you're not into it, whatever.
Cool. Bye.
Bye.